everybody. Welcome back to the Hawks Huddle podcast. We have a very special guest here today. He is a Super Bowl champion, a three-time Pro Bowler on the 1970 All-Decade Team, a Dallas Cowboy legend, and we finally get to say this, an NFL Hall of Famer. Welcome to the show, all-star wide receiver and the original 88, Mr. Drew Pearson. Thanks for coming on. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Glad to join the huddle. I haven't been in the huddle a long time, so it's ready, great.
Awesome. thank you again. We know you've been very, very busy with a lot going on in Dallas, and of course you were just inducted into the Hall of Fame, so we know you've been asked this question a lot, but we have to ask you, how does it feel to finally be inducted into the Hall of Fame?
You can ask me that question as many times as you want, okay? Because I'm happy to answer that question with a positive answer this time, you know. So it really feels great, you know. I waited all told 38 years, 33 as a senior, to try to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I can't imagine the feeling being any different if you're a first ballot Hall of Famer than if you had to wait 33 years for that. It's the same thing because it's the same Hall of Fame. It's the same message you get that you're in. You join this class. You join this team of immortals that you'll be immortalized with this team for the rest of your life. And I mean, how cool is that? It's a great feeling. And, you know, God has a plan. He knows when it's best for things to happen in your life. And I think I better listen to him because it's feeling really good right now.
Yeah, Drew, you did just say you waited over 38 years and it feels so great. I mean, I remember watching the video of David Baker when he first told you. Did you just kind of want to give us a little bit of insight on how that worked? I know you were kind of with Jerry Jones at the team facility, and you said it was a chance at mortality, at immortality that they were giving you. How did that all kind of play out, Drew?
Yeah, they set me up, my quarterback, Roger Staubach, and they knew who to use to make it seem authentic, all right? Because Roger Harley jokes around, okay? He's a pretty straightforward guy. And they asked me to, Roger and I to come over to the Star, the Cowboys facility, to meet with Mr. Jones. And the guy said in the letter, he thinks it might have something to do with real estate. And I said, okay, this is logical because Roger and Jerry are involved in some real estate ventures together. And I thought maybe they might want to include me into that mix some kind of way. I didn't know how, but maybe Hail Mary or something like that, because we just had the 45th anniversary back in December of the Hail Mary. So I thought maybe it had something to do with that. So we get over there, we go into the meeting, we meet with Mr. Jones, we're sitting there talking. Then all of a sudden, can you hear that?
The big knock, big knock.
The big knock. I got the knock on the door and Jerry Jones told me to go answer the door. And I answered the door and when I opened it, David Baker was filling up the door well. You know, he's a big man.
Yeah.
And his head came through first because it's a big head. And I told him that. And he's proud of it, which he should be. But, he told me, Drew, I knew he wasn't coming there to tell me something negative.
Yeah.
Okay, he could have done it in a text message or call me or something, had Roger tell me or something. But I knew it would be good news and it was, and that's when the emotions started coming out. But guys, that's what I feel this induction is all about. It's about immortality. You know, in life, we want to have something, create something that outlives us and it lives on after we're gone. And some people put their name on a book or a building or something like that to create that immortality. But what better way to create immortality than being a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Wow.
So amazing. I want to move on from Hall of Fame talk, but before I do, I reached out before you even got inducted because I saw on YouTube your reaction to not being inducted last year. I know it may be hard to remember that feeling just because of all this excitement, amazingness that has happened, but can you take us back to last year when you were not inducted? Like, what was going on? Did you feel just disrespected?
No, I didn't feel disrespected. I just felt disappointment. I didn't blame anybody else. You know, I just felt the disappointment and heartbreak within me. Okay. Because I thought this would be my opportunity to get in through the centennial class. I haven't ever been a finalist before. I'd never been discussed in the room as a finalist. So, you know, this is the first time. I didn't know how to act. So I had everybody at the house, all friends and media. I worked with just about every media station in this market. So I had to, you invite one, then you have to invite them all. And so I did that. And, you know, I didn't think the moment would turn out like it did. I thought it would be a celebration as opposed to all the disappointment and heartbreak. But again, you know, how could I be so disappointed? There's so many other guys. Look at Cliff Branch, you know, from the Oakland Raiders, a tremendous receiver in the 70s. Better stats than some of the guys in the Hall of Fame that played in the 70s. But he's deceased, you know. Who can speak up for him?
Right.
You know, so you start feeling bad for yourself. Then you think about the other guys, like a Randy Gradishaw, who should be in there, no question about it. And a Cliff Branch, who can't speak for himself. What about his family? How do they feel?
Right.
So I started thinking about those things, and that put a lot of it in perspective for me. And I said, well, maybe now, because of my name being out there, some people will look at my record, and maybe I'll get a little further along in the process, and maybe that will get me over the hump next time.
Right.
Yeah, for sure, Drew. And you waited, like you said, over about 38 years. Like Jacqueline said, we did want to kind of transition a bit to your on-field career. Obviously, a ton of highlights that you made back in the 70s. My question to you, I was just watching the catch where you caught it in triple coverage, and then before the horse collar penalty was brought in, you nearly had a touchdown on that play. Drew, my question to you, though, is how different do you think your game would be in today's NFL, just in terms of the rule changes, going across the middle of the field? Not many receivers do that anymore. How different would your game be?
Oh, it'd be a lot different. You know, I mean, I don't think it would be different. It'd be more effective. You know, you know, the rules I played under when I came into the league in 73 were there until 79. And those rules allowed a defensive back to bump you as many times as he wanted to, all the way downfield, as long as the ball wasn't in the air. Yeah. A defensive back could come up to you like he's going to dog you in coverage, then fake like he's going back, and then come back and cut your legs right out from under you. How are you supposed to run a pass route like that? You know, you think Davante Adams could run a pass route with that type of coverage?
No.
Especially
no
when
way.
The guy like – you got a guy like Mel Blount from the Steelers, right, who's 6'4", yes, 205, run a 4.5 40, trying to keep you from going inside, and he's bumping you all the way downfield. So they changed the rule because of Mel Blount, because no team could get inside on third down against him. So now they have the Mel Blount rule with the 5-yard bump within one bump in the 5-yard area. And these guys nowadays are taking advantage of that. And also, today's cornerbacks aren't the quality of cornerbacks I played against. You know, I played cornerbacks that are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, Willie Brown, Emmett Thomas, Jimmy Johnson, people like that are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And because our game was different back then as far as the salary cap, you could keep players on the roster, and they were good players. You didn't cut a player because he didn't fit the salary cap, even though he's a great player. So that made a difference of the quality of play we had out there on the field. But with these rules nowadays where they can hit you one time, and then the quality of defensive backs, and then they can't hit you in the head, they can't get your knees out going over the middle, I think I would have prospered very well. I think I would have got one of those seven figures, at least seven figures contracts.
Yeah.
At least. Oh, maybe eight figures.
Like that's the big difference.
These guys are getting nowadays. Big difference.
Yeah.
You know what I got? My first year salary was $14,500.
Wow.
No way.
Wow.
I played my first year with the Dallas Cowboys. Tom Landry, Roger Staubach. I started the 10th game of my rookie year. So 14,500 in my signing bonus. I know you make more than my signing bonus. I hope you'd make more than my signing bonus. My signing bonus was $150.
Wow. Wow.
Oh,
$150. I didn't hold out for $200. Yeah. I wanted the opportunity. And I was at Tulsa University, and proximity to Dallas, we always got the Cowboys on TV because you had a lot of regional games back then. And we always got the Cowboys, and I couldn't stand the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh.
The only one I liked on the Cowboys was the great Bob Hayes, Hall of Famer Bob Hayes. I grew up in New Jersey, a Giant and Jet fan. So I wasn't a Cowboy fan, and I'm upset the Giants and Jets aren't on TV down here in Tulsa. You always had the Cowboys. Well, I didn't like the Cowboys until I got that signing bonus of $150. Right. And then I became a big fan.
Yeah, see, you can probably tell by my background, I don't like the Cowboys either. I'm a huge Giants fan, always has been. So I find that very, very funny that you were not a Cowboys fan. But I feel like if I ever did work for the Cowboys or played for them, I would be as well. But right now, yeah, I would never call myself a Cowboy fan. I want to talk about the draft. So you went undrafted. What did you think when you went undrafted? Are you thinking like, okay, there's no career in this, I got to think of something else to do? Or did you kind of use that as motivation?
Well, you know, I was just disappointed not getting drafted. This is 17 rounds of the draft, 450 some players. And you had scouts telling you that, you know, you're going to get drafted somewhere in this draft. Yeah. I had other teammates to get drafted. Two guys drafted in the second round. My roommate, defensive back, got drafted in the 13th round. And, you know, then they're calling me and seeing if I got anything and nothing. But, you know, as an undrafted free agent, I had a chance to sign with Green Bay, Pittsburgh, or Dallas. And I picked Dallas, not because of the money, obviously. Pittsburgh offered, I mean, 10 times much more money than that. But it was Tom Landry. It was the proximity to Tulsa. I can get in my car and drive there in 3.5 hours if I needed to work out or be there for something. And that's what pretty much sold me. And then also the Cowboys had a history of free agents making their team, including Hall of Famer Cliff Harris, who's going in the centennial class. Yeah. Cliff Harris was a free agent from Ouachita Baptist, okay?
Wow.
Ouachita Baptist College, all right?
Okay.
He's the only pro football player ever to come out of Ouachita Baptist.
For sure.
I figure if Cliff could come out of Ouachita Baptist and make the Dallas Cowboys, I figure I could come out of Tulsa and have a good chance to make the Dallas Cowboys as well. So those were inspirations to pick the Cowboys over those other teams, and it turned out to be a pretty good choice. I played eight seasons with a Hall of Fame quarterback, Roger Staubach. And then three with Danny White, who was should be a Ring of Honor guy for the Dallas Cowboys for sure. And he would be a Hall of Fame quarterback if he had a little more longevity on his career. But I was blessed to play with two great quarterbacks. And so I think I made the right decision in choosing the Cowboys.
Yeah, no, you sure did. And 10 years with the Cowboys making the playoffs and all of them, a couple of Super Bowls as well, Drew. I just wanted to get a sense, though, of how that transition was from Tulsa to Tom Landry and Staubach. I mean, you guys had a couple of, I think you said, poor years at Tulsa and didn't make the playoffs. Obviously, as just mentioned, you were undrafted. Was it pretty intimidating going into that big Dallas field? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When I first went down there for the first mini camp, Cowboys were the first to start those mini camps, and they started them that year in 73. And the first mini camp was at the end of February because the draft was in February. And so all the rookies were invited down. And then you had a chance in that mini camp to maybe show them something, to get invited to the next mini camp at the end of March with the veterans included. So you kept trying to show something that, you know, some way and somehow that you belong. But there was like 100 rookies trying to make the team, you know, 17 draft choices, and the rest were free agents just like me. So you had to do something to catch their attention. And I think what I caught their attention with initially was catching the football. That's something I can always do. I might not be the biggest guy, the fastest guy. I can't out jump anybody, but I can catch the football. Damn. And I had speed to the football. There you go. See him?
There you go.
Never drop the pass for the Cowboy. I don't even drop a phone call. But it was just the opportunity. And Tulsa, you know, we didn't have any success, so I didn't have a chance to flourish. I came in there as a quarterback at a South River High School in New Jersey. I replaced Joe Theismann, quarterback in high school. And I became an all-state quarterback 2 years after he left. And so I played 2 years at quarterback at Tulsa, and then, you know, moved to receiver and only played 2 years there, caught 55 passes in 2 years, 22 one season and 33 the next season. So, and then the team wasn't having success. You know, we had three losing seasons. I had three head coaches. in four years, and we were on probation three of the 4 years.
So
that negative environment didn't give you a chance. But then all of a sudden, you're around these Dallas Cowboys, okay? You're around Roger Staubach, Rayfield Wright, Bob Lilly, oh my goodness, Leroy Jordan, you know, people like that, Calvin Hill, all these quality people. And because of that, now if you can pick up certain things, learn the system, and my philosophy going through training camp was live to play another day. And that's what you had to do at that time, take one day at a time and try to add, compound whatever you did yesterday to even do it better the next day, because they always got their eye on you. You know, that camera in the sky, that film, as they say, the film don't lie.
So the
Cowboys break down each and every practice, every drill. So you had to perform. But the philosophy was live to play another day. And then I finally made the team and was so excited. 14-5 didn't matter. I was just happy to be there. And then the problem with that, once you make the team, now you got all these friends and family and everybody thinking you're rich and millionaire and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But they're all asking for loans, you know. So the old saying, success is relative. The more success, the more relatives that you have, okay?
Yeah.
So that's how that turned out. But I needed to borrow money from them to get through the season at $14,500. We played 14 games then. So that was like, you know, $1,000, a little over $1,000 a game, less than that when you take out taxes. So,
right. I think we're going to have to end it here soon. I'm going to ask you one more question. We know you're very, very busy. So again, we want to thank you for coming here. It's super cool for us to be.
So what's your name?
Jacqueline.
Jacqueline.
And Mark.
Yeah,
that's Mark.
Yeah, you guys are doing a great job. I enjoy being with you guys.
Thank you so much.
I'm a little tight on schedule, but maybe we can, you know, pick it up somewhere along the line. And
yeah,
I'd be glad to do it again with you guys.
Yeah,
we appreciate.
Is this your ambition to get into sports and stuff like that?
For sure.
Yeah, this is something that we for sure want to do. We for sure want to work somewhere in the sport media world. I don't know yet, but this is something that we have a passion for. We love to talk about sports. So this is just something that we've just always wanted to do, both of us. And we met through school, and we've only met on Zoom. So this is kind of something that we just love to do, talking to people like you, like legends that we didn't get to watch play. Thank you. But I want to ask you one last thing. What does the number 88 mean to you? Because people forget that you are the original 88.
Original.
The original. You know, you got Mike Irvin, Dez Bryant, CeeDee Lamb. What does it mean to be 88?
Well, it means a lot, you know. First of all, I had to establish that. I wasn't the original 88. There was an 88 before I got there, and he ended up getting traded to the Miami Dolphins for Otto Stowe, who came in and as a wide receiver. He wanted 82, so 88 was available. So I took that number because it was 85, 80. Goldman Richards had 83, 81. They didn't sound good to me.
Yeah.
So I went with 88, and you know, I was able to create some success in that number and created an individual legacy. But it's not a real legacy until somebody comes along and takes what you did and that number you did and does something more in that. And that's what Michael Irvin did.
Yes.
I tell Michael to this day, it ain't no legacy. It ain't no streams of 88s coming through, picked by Mr. Jones, held up for the best wide receiver they think that could live up to that number. There's no legacy that strong if Michael Irvin doesn't take it and do something with it. And then we told Dez, now, you know, don't do what we did. Do more than what we did.
Yeah.
And Dez was rolling. His first eight seasons was rolling. But
what
Dez wasn't able to do, and it's not his fault, it was the people around him.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't able to take the individual success and turn it into team success.
Right.
Michael Irvin did that, Hall of Fame, three Super Bowls. Drew did that, All Pro, and then Super Bowls and all that. So. That's what we told. But for the Cowboys to treat that number like they do is really special to me, because they don't treat any other number like that.
No.
You know, we got two number 22s in the Hall of Fame, Bob Hayes and Emmitt Smith.
Right.
They don't reserve that for the next 22, the great number 22, you know.
Right.
We don't see number 12 out there, but they don't extend that. They just hold it back, you know. 74, right. The same thing, but they treat 88. And I'm glad they do that, because a lot of people say, Drew, wouldn't you rather have your number retired? No, because every time the fans see that 88, they think of Dez, they think of Michael, and they think of Drew. And that's pretty cool. So that's the only number the Cowboys treat like that. So I really appreciate the Cowboys respecting the number and what we did in that number to gain that respect.
No, it sure is. That's really cool. And it just keeps building to the legacy of it, like you said, Drew. That is going to wrap it up for us. We certainly appreciate it, Drew. We don't want to hold you for too long. We also wish you the best. I know the weather down there. You're getting the Canadian weather that we're getting out here. So we wish you the best.
No, today it's 75.
Oh,
okay.
That's Texas, man. That's Texas. If you don't like what's going on, just hang around, because it'll change.
It'll get back to normal.
Right.
It'll change.
Thank you so much, Drew Pearson, for coming on here and answering it. Hopefully maybe we can do it in the future.
Please,
We know you're a busy man, but Pro Football Hall of Famer, Drew Pearson.
Thank you.
Thanks, Drew.
Thanks for having me in the Hawks huddle.
Thanks,
Thank
Drew.
You so much, Drew.
All right.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Take care.